Want to learn how to leverage your marketing to get clients on repeat? Charge a fee that leaves you with money in your pocket even after you've finished paying your bills? And finally, stop working with the clients that you've long outgrown? Liberated Business is a transformational program that combines group and one-on-one work so you get the best results possible. This differs from every other program out there because it helps you make money while supporting your joy and liberation throughout your entrepreneurial journey. Liberated Business starts this June and runs through November, and enrollment is open now. Visit thebadtherapist.coach/liberatedbusiness to get all of the details and sign up. DM me on Instagram @thebadtherapist with any questions or to learn more. I cannot wait to get started with you.
I definitely had some attitude around like, well, I'm a therapist. I'm not like a business person. I don't do businessy stuff. I just help people and they pay me money. It's like, well, honey, you have a business. That means you have a business. Or if you aren't running it like a business, then you've got a really expensive hobby. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was seeing it as like, I don't do business. I do therapy. But the reality is that in a private practice, you do both. You are both in the employee role of the therapist who is providing the service to the client, and you're in the CEO role of the person who is leading the business.
Hey there, and welcome to The Bad Therapist Show, the podcast for current and aspiring private practice therapists who want to earn more money, work less, and have a way bigger impact. I'm your host, Felicia, The Bad Therapist. Former goody-goody therapist turned six-figure private practice owner and therapist business coach. I'm here to help you learn everything you need to know about private practice and expanding beyond the one-to-one model so you can earn more money and increase your impact as a therapist without burning out or hustling. Using my proven liberated business method, therapists at all stages of business have been able to grow their income while becoming even better therapists. And I'm on a mission to help you do the same. It's time for you to get your time back and enjoy being a therapist again. You ready? Let's get started. Hello and welcome to The Bad Therapist Show. I'm your host, Felicia, The Bad Therapist. Happy anniversary, y'all. We're celebrating a year on the podcast, so I have a very special episode for you. Today, I'm highlighting some of my favorite moments from the past year. You're going to get a dose of practical tips on topics like niching, marketing, and sales, plus mindset recalibrations that will make you money. Let's get into it. First up, episode 4 is all about choosing a niche for your therapy practice. This is a perennial topic for us therapists. I spend the whole episode walking you through how to quickly find a niche that you're going to love. The clip I want to share from this episode will help you dig a little deeper and root out sneaky things that could be keeping you from creating the practice of your dreams. It's a potent bit of mindset work that you can use to clarify your niche and upgrade any part of your practice. Now I'm going to give you some mindset journaling work that you can do this next week, because there's like a sneaky fear that I actually haven't shared yet that I'm going to share with you right now. And that fear is the fear of actually getting what you want. Now, you would think you would be happy to get what you want, but in so many cases, like, we actually fear getting what we want. Why? Because of good therapist conditioning. Because if we had what we wanted, we wouldn't be playing along with that like martyrdom. I work so hard. I do my job because it's a labor of love and I'm poor and all my work is just so draining. Like, if you were to have a caseload where you're like, I love all these people. This is fun. This is great. I can't believe I get paid to do this. Oh my gosh. Like, I feel so clear in who I want to work with and I'm so good at calling them in. Sometimes we can feel a lot of feelings about that. Sometimes that would mean we would have fear of like losing standing in our group of friends. Like, how would our other therapist friends and colleagues feel about that? Would that be really hard for us? How would our partners and family members feel about that? So what I want to invite you to do here is to find maybe 15 minutes in this upcoming week, get quiet, maybe lay down in your bed. I think this might be nice for you to do without journaling, though of course you could journal about it later. But just to close your eyes and imagine having exactly what you wanted in your therapy practice, the clients, the money, the schedule, the lifestyle, just getting exactly what you wanted. And then I want you to feel what comes up when you imagine that, including the fears. Notice the fears that might arise if you were to get exactly what you want. For me, a really common fear is like, well, what if I were still unhappy after getting what I want? Like, ooh, that it gets existential for me, right? Like I said, some of us might have fears around it changing the nature of our relationships or what we think about the field of therapy in general or climate change. Like we could just go all over the place. So be open to hearing what are the fears there and see if you can just feel them, ride the waves, show up with openness and compassion. Don't try to figure it out. Just be a loving witness to what is arising. And then I want you to imagine and sense into what would feel so good about having a practice filled with clients you enjoy. How would it feel to do that work? What would it feel like to be a therapist in a practice with clients that you really, really enjoy in all the different ways? Folks who agree to your policies and practices, people who are coming in for the things that you really love to work with folks on that you feel like really great doing. And if you're like, oh, but I would need more training to do that. Great. I want you to imagine a practice in which you have the time and money to devote to the training you'd want to do. Like, I want you to really let yourself go to having the practice you want. And if you notice anything that you want, and then your brain goes, oh, but that's not possible. I can't have that. I want you to remind yourself that you are doing imagination play and that you get to snap your fingers. And in this imagination, you get to just have that. That problem gets to be solved. We don't worry about how it got solved. We just decide it did. And you get to pay attention to how that feels. I can't give you an anniversary episode without including a clip on marketing. This is one of the top things I hear private practice therapists stress about. In this clip from episode 5, I share the biggest attitude shift that you need to go from hating marketing and being overwhelmed to feeling confident and effective. I think I had some attitude, maybe not as much as most, but I definitely had some attitude around like, well, I'm a therapist. I'm not like a business person. I don't do businessy stuff. I just help people and they pay me money. It's like, well, honey, you have a business. That means you have a business. Or if you aren't running it like a business, then you've got a really expensive hobby. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was seeing it as like, I don't do business, I do therapy. But the reality is that in a private practice, you do both. You are both in the employee role of the therapist who is providing the service to the client, and you're in the CEO role of the person who is leading the business, making those bigger decisions, being the visionary, thinking about ways to innovate, ways to grow and change and shift. You are both. And a lot of therapists leaving graduate school, and even those who are deciding to go into private practice, are really unwilling to see themselves as the CEO. They think, I can run a business as the employee therapist. And that's not going to go well. So if you're hearing this and you're like, oh, that's what's wrong. Like there is a good chance that you didn't realize that like there's this whole other role that you need to step into. And part of that is marketing. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that the CEO does marketing. I would almost say like that's yet another hat that you wear and another identity that you have in your business. But you need to understand that there are all these different hats that you wear as a therapist in private practice, and they're all really important. And if you can almost turn this into maybe more of a game or a puzzle, it can be so much more fun because then you're thinking about, oh, how can I learn here? How can I figure this out? Ooh, what happens if I press this button or turn that dial, or I combine this color with that color? I'm like obviously mixing metaphors here, but like turning it into a place where you can play and experiment and grow. And this is something, if you're building a private practice, whether you think you're going to be in private practice for the rest of your life, or you think you're going to be an entrepreneur for the rest of your life, chances are you're building something that you want to have longevity, right? You're building something, you've gone through the trouble of creating a private practice because this is something that you care about, because it's something that you want to support you for the rest of your life and the rest of your career. So if you see this as anything I learn now
can and will be useful for me in the future. It's kind of like the opposite of everything you say can and will be used against you. It's like everything I learn and experiment with now will be used for my benefit for the future. And what that means when you truly believe that is that there's no way you could actually waste your time and energy. Episode 7 is one of my most valuable episodes because it's where I teach you how to have a super quick, high-converting consultation call. No more free 20-minute consultations that actually just turn into 40-minute time sucks. Learn the exact process to get that call down to 10 minutes and get more clients. In the clip you're about to hear, I share why controlling the flow of the call is so crucial for success, and how it immediately communicates your competence to potential clients. This is going to make such a difference for you, and you're going to want to listen to the whole episode after you finish this one. The other really important thing about how you're going to shift how you approach this call is that you're going to actually control the flow of the conversation. Once again, in our typical consultation or intake calls, the conversation just goes all over the place. The client doesn't really know what they're supposed to be doing. You often don't know what you're really supposed to be doing. And again, you leave the call having exchanged a lot of information, probably used a lot of energy, but you didn't really get very far. And again, oftentimes it's not resulting in clients actually converting or people actually converting into clients in your therapy practice. So we want to change that. So it's a better experience for you. It's a better experience for the client. And when you are kind of controlling the flow of the conversation, you're also sending a very strong message to your client that you know how to hold them. You know how to facilitate a process. And for a lot of us in our consultation calls, we're not doing a great job of facilitating a process. So we do want to change that. So now I'm going to take you through the steps of a screening call. So in your communication leading up to the call, prime the client that the call will be brief or less than 10 minutes. So in my therapy practice, what would happen is folks would go to my website and they would fill out a form. That is 9 times out of 10 how people would contact me. Occasionally, I would get a phone call, but usually people would go to my website and they would fill out that form. And so in that form, I would be asking them, you know, what's bringing you in for therapy? And so when I wrote them back after getting that first form, I would say, hey, thank you for filling out that form. I'd be happy to speak with you before I schedule first sessions with clients. I like to just have a very brief screening call so we can make sure it makes sense to move on to that next stage of actually having a first session. So you don't need to set aside much time for this call, really only 10 minutes or less. And here are the next few times that I have available. And what I love about this approach is that, I mean, it's really easy. Well, it's a lot easier to find 10 minutes in my day, even if I have a pretty full caseload or I've got other things in my life going on. It's so much easier for me to find a 10-minute slot that I can offer somebody to do this call. And likewise, it's so much easier for them to find a 10-minute slot where they can do this call. And not only that, but by making it really clear in that initial first response to clients that this is going to be a brief call, I'm already starting to prime them for how the interaction is actually going to go down. That way, when we do get on the call, I will remind them again that it's going to be a brief call, but I'm already starting to set the tone. I'm already starting to demonstrate that I am a guide. Episode 8 is an interview with my colleague, Emily Adams. In this clip, Emily and I are nerding out about somatics, a body-oriented approach that we both trained in. Emily shares how her background in anatomy integrates with somatic approaches to help her clients go deeper.
I do love that there is more research coming out about some of the, they're not even newer modalities, but the newer accepted modalities, the modalities that we're returning to, like paying attention to the body, and that doesn't have to be this like elusive thing. It can actually be something that's grounded in biology and in anatomy, and that for the people that want that evidence, that's there. And I think that's what I really like about somatics and having such a strong background in anatomy, is that I find it easier to ground the somatics in biology and in anatomy, because I think that can help it feel less scary for people and less confusing. Because it's not that we're just doing something spiritual. It is spiritual, but it's not only spiritual. It's also like down here on earth. We're not just going to the mountaintops. We're not just going to the clouds. We're bringing that into the body. And we live on earth. We live here in our bodies. And so we can do a lot of the mental stuff. And that's a really safe space for a lot of people. And I'm not against that at all. But I love creating that conversation, like, oh, where does the mind and the body collaborate? Where they communicate? How can we honor both of those wisdoms?
Episode 34 is a guide for exactly what to do if you are shifting from agency or group practice work into starting your very own private practice. This clip features a topic that I believe we don't talk about nearly enough. Let's give it a listen. You may also find that upon looking at this, you ask for a loan. So I think I've shared this on the podcast before. When I first started my private practice, I actually asked a friend for a loan to help me put a down payment on my office, on my psychotherapy office. And I spent, I think, about a year paying her back. I think it was about $2,000, which was a lot of money for me at the time. And, you know, still kind of is, but like that's definitely shifted. And so, you know, that's not going to be for everyone. You may not feel comfortable, or it may not seem appropriate, or it could be maybe complicated to ask friends or loved ones for loans. But anyway, you don't have to go to a friend or loved one. You could also get an actual business loan, which I have since gotten, by the way. I took out a business loan 2-3 years ago to help with my business. And so these are options for you as well. You may decide that you do want some funding so that you can kind of take the pressure off yourself. You don't have to worry about money as much, and you are doing that very consciously so that you can give yourself more time to get your business off the ground. A lot of us feel really weird about taking out loans for businesses. We feel like we shouldn't need to, like it's maybe irresponsible. We can be really frightened about debt because a lot of us have so much already with our student debt. And so it can feel really, really scary and just also like morally wrong. Like a lot of us have some beliefs around taking out money as being somehow morally wrong. Like if we were really great at business, we just wouldn't need this. And that means if we're taking it out, that we're just actually being like irresponsible and we're not working hard enough. But I want to normalize that businesses often do take out loans at the start of their journeys, or when they're wanting to invest in some growth, or maybe they're wanting to make a new product or open a new location. Like this is normal in business. And so if you feel any guilt or weirdness about that, I just want to present that as an option to you, that that's not bad or wrong. I'm also thinking about We Should All Be Millionaires, which is a book by Rachel Rogers. And I think she says somewhere in that book, she talks about the broad differences between how women are taught to relate to money and how men are taught to relate to money, how men are often given the encouragement to take smart risks, to invest in themselves, their businesses, their ideas, their endeavors. And the financial advice generally given to women is to stop buying lattes. If we would just stop buying all those damn lattes, then we'd have enough money to, you know, be financially secure. And so obviously that's not true. The same thing is said about millennials and anyone who's maybe just like othered in some way. We're like, well, you're just frivolous. And the reality is that making wise investments can actually be a really skillful move. And so this is an avenue that may be open to you that you can explore if you feel like, you know, I know that in order for me to show up in my business optimally, I need cash in the bank. Like I know I need that safety net. And so, you know, yeah, maybe there's a reality in which I could do it without it, but I know that's just going to increase my stress level so much that that will actually slow my progress. If you know that about yourself, this is potentially a good option for you and something you could consider. Episode 37 is all about why you need to prioritize pleasure if you want to grow your practice and make more money. When you're in the day-to-day of running your practice, it is all too easy to forget about this. Let's change that right now. I'm also thinking of a particular client that I've worked with. So this is like one of my business coaching clients, a therapist in private practice.
By far, this is the person I've worked with who is the least abashed about experiencing pleasure in their life. They love to travel. They love to go all over the world. They love to take tons of time off work. They don't have a problem with charging fees that fund their life. They're pretty unapologetic about it. And what I found in helping this person grow their practice is it actually grew incredibly quickly. Like within months, they were tripling their revenue. And so I'm not saying like, oh, just go on tons and tons of vacations, book a trip to another country and you'll automatically start earning more money. I'm not saying that. But at the same time, I'm like questioning myself now, even though that isn't like an obvious straight path, it's not like there's some guarantee that if you go on vacation, you'll earn more money. I do think in many ways, when we do give ourselves the things that we need, when we resource ourselves first, we do oftentimes find the resources, the inner resources we need to create the kind of businesses we want. When we're always just trying to create from a place of lack, you don't have enough, you're exhausted, you're burnt out, you feel like you can't ever get what you want, it's really hard to generate from that place. But if you're already giving yourself what you want, then it's like, of course, your business is going to grow from that place. I'm thinking about this dynamic of kind of having this attitude of, well, I'll give to myself once my business proves to me that it's really a great business. Until then, I don't get anything I want. I can imagine on a spiritual level, it's sort of like, if your business gives you more, you're just going to keep on working more. And so if you can show to your business right now that you can take even small steps to take care of yourself, to incorporate pleasure into your daily life, then it's going to be like, okay, you can handle a bit more. But if you're just like at your wit's end, like cannot even find the littlest bit of time to connect with pleasure, then I could see how it could be hard for your business to grow in that environment. So again, I know that we all have very different life circumstances. And so if your way of connecting with pleasure right now is very simple, quote unquote, small, I want you to know that that is a great place to start. You don't have to make some grand, expensive gesture. It can be as simple as taking a breath in between sessions and reminding yourself that that is part of your pleasure practice and your resourcing practice. It gets to be as small or as big as you need and want it to be right now. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today's episode is a great one to share with all of your friends, especially if they'd be new to the podcast. Please help me celebrate my first anniversary of the show by heading over to Apple Podcasts and leaving a review and a 5-star rating if you found this helpful. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you like to listen. I hope this walk down memory lane has been as fun for you as it was for me. If something jumped out for you, then please go back and make sure to listen to the full episodes that I highlighted today. If you want to learn more about working with me, head over to my website, thebadtherapist.coach, to learn more about my offerings and book an exploratory call. I'll see you next week. That's all today for The Bad Therapist Show. Thanks so much for hanging with me. I hope you got some gems that you can start using right away in your own business so that you can break out of good therapist conditioning and build the business that you want. If you've gotten something out of this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Share it with one of your good therapist friends who really needs to hear it. And while you're at it, please consider leaving a rating and/or review so that we can change not just our individual businesses, but transform the mental health system that got us here in the first place. Thank you so much. I'll see you next week for more private practice and coaching tips. Remember, bad therapists make the best therapists.